Commodity Week is made possible with support from AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com. And with support from ADM, working with the American farmer, creating products from his crops, creating markets for crops. ADM, resourceful by nature. Commodity Week is a production of listener-supported public radio at the University of Illinois. To learn more, visit us online at will.uiuc.edu.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason. Later this half hour, we'll talk with Purdue University Ag Extension economist Chris Hurt. Our panelists today are Greg Johnson of the Andersons here in Champaign County, Clayton Pope of Clayton Pope Commodities out of Champaign, Illinois, and Bill Mayer of Roach Ag Marketing from Lexington, Illinois.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
A reminder as we start this program that it was recorded Wednesday evening, November the 23rd, 2005. Let's start with this question, gentlemen. What are the primary indicators you'll be watching as we go through the winter months that may help determine the price of corn? And we'll start with you, Bill Mayer.
Well, I think that the natural progression here is to go to the demand side of the market, and that's what the market in general is going to start watching. In particular, I think the feed demand as we come into the January report that gives the December 1st stocks number, I think that's going to be extremely important and see whether we're feeding more or less than anticipated.
Bill Mayer is with Roach Ag Marketing out of Lexington, Illinois. Clayton Pope is with Clayton Pope Commodities here in Champaign.
Well, I think the most hopeful thing to look for would be some white knight to appear on the export horizon, and hopefully some demand will surface, given the incredibly tight world carryover we have, the carryover outside the U.S. borders. It's at a multi-decade low, and it's kind of like a pile of gas-soaked rags. I think if a big buyer stepped up to the plate, it could be a whole different world, but it's just sorely absent at this point, but that'd be the main thing to be looking for.
President Bush just got back from China and Asia.
I didn't see too many purchase orders in his hand there.
And Greg Johnson with the Andersons in Champaign County.
Yeah, I would agree. The three things we want to look at are all on the demand side. Ethanol usage continues to improve, but those numbers usually get reported after the fact. So that probably won't be a market mover, even though that long term that's extremely friendly. Feed demand seems to be constant pretty much from year to year. And exports, even if we improve exports from 1.8 to 1.9, that would be a huge move. But keep in mind, 2-3 months ago, we thought this crop was only 10.3. Now it's 11. So we went up 700 million. So a 100 million increase in exports, even though that's not very likely, wouldn't probably help this market out in the short run.
Greg, has the transportation problems that were wreaked by the hurricanes been solved in the United States?
Well, transportation is extremely much more expensive. It's come down here somewhat, but it's kind of like the gasoline prices. After seeing them go from $1.50 to $3, now we're happy that gasoline's only $2, and the barge rates and the rail rates all have come down from their highs, but they're still quite a bit higher than where they were a year ago. But the transportation is available. It's just more costly than it's been in the past.
And tell me about the 50 and 100 car trains that you've been shipping, that $3.2 million that was on the ground at one point outside the elevator out over the last month and a half.
Yeah, we're getting on the average two trains in a week, 200 car units a train a week. That's 700,000 bushels. So over the next 5 weeks, we should have enough corn in enough rail cars in to have that whole outside pile picked up and moved out.
And then, Bill, as you take a look at the entire transportation system, saying that maybe it's been straightened out, rail cars are available, what does it mean for the cash grain market over the next month and a half?
Well, of course, we've seen the bases improve. I would say, Greg, correct me if I'm wrong, but 15 to 20 cents for the January corn bases in most locations. I think that what you can look forward to here is that as the futures, if the futures make any kind of a rally, and I don't think it's totally inconceivable they couldn't make a 10 or 15 cent move or bounce from the lows here, at that point, your bases, you're going to see corn sold. I mean, let's be realistic. The corn is going to be sold, and you could probably see the bases widen back out some. So I think you're going to see kind of a up and down movement in the bases as the prices or the need for cash flow push the farmer into sales.
Clayton, I took a quick look at the farmer comments that were coming in on the AgWeb website this week. They're operated by Farm Journal. Southern Minnesota reported a whole farm average of 210 bushels to the acre. He'd just finished up, I think, on the 18th of this month harvest. Nebraska dropped in with 162. That was above his average. A report from Central South Dakota that corn there, 180 to 200. These all sound like Illinois and Iowa numbers, frankly. And then there was this report from Lee County, Illinois, in the northwestern part of the state, and I quote this, "Lots of NH3 going on this fall, especially on the corn stalks. Never seen this much before." Does it all conjure up a 12 billion bushel corn crop for 2006?
Boy, I hope not. That's the last thing we need, but it is kind of interesting. I think, you know, a month ago or 2 months ago, there was so much talk that, you know, they're going to see this dramatic acreage shift. And it does seem already as if the more things change, the more they stay the same. And whereas I would certainly think would be looking at a million, maybe 2 million acre shift from corn to beans, it looks like that would be a kind of a maximum at this point.
And, Greg, what are you hearing from the farmers here in the east central part of the state and the west central part of Indiana about what their acreage plans are at this time?
I think we'll just see a slight decrease here in the good farm ground of east central Illinois, west central Indiana. Where you're probably going to see a bigger drop is out west, Kansas, Nebraska, on the irrigated ground. We've seen some reports out that, when you're looking at increased diesel fuel, diesel fuel and natural gas costs, it's going to cost quite a bit more to plant corn. And a lot of them have already said they're going to switch over to sorghum, soybeans, or wheat. So I still think we could see a 3 to 4 million acre drop, even though it won't come here in central Illinois. I think we could still see a 3 million acre corn drop for next year.
Well, we'll come back to that in just a second and see if anybody else agrees with him. But I did want to ask this question. The trade continued at least through the Wednesday trade of this week in the contract low area for the corn market. Is anybody still bearish the corn market at this point? Last week when I asked this question, I got a lot of no's.
Yeah, I heard that.
I can't be extremely bearish from this point. I mean, not that you have to go back up, but I think that the lows are pretty close within, you know, we may try to go down that $1.85 level, but I think it's going to be a struggle to get there.
I would have to still say that, I mean, the trend's your friend. I think weaker prices are more likely than higher prices for the foreseeable future. The main problem in my mind is there's just too much grain, both corn and beans, in farmers' hands. And I don't think there's going to be any kind of price threshold that's going to get that out of farmers' hands. It's going to be cash needs and the calendar that's going to force those sales.
And people are looking at the nearby month and saying, well, 191 is holding. Well, when SEP corn went off the board or traded down to 191, the Dease corn was 12 cents higher. Now the Dease corn is down to 191, and the March corn is 12 cents higher. You know, as long as we just keep looking at the front month only, we're saying, well, the market's holding. But really, those deferred bids have come down quite a bit.
Let's just maybe to throw a little bit of a positive thought process in here. If you look at things compared to a year ago, I mean, especially it's a regional situation, but in Illinois here, for example, you've got less stocks than you had a year ago, at least if you look at the numbers. You have weather that's a lot better, a lot more conducive to holding this grain than what it was a year ago, with cooler temperatures and some ability to not near as much moisture as we had. And our demand is higher. We can be bearish on demand, but you look at the numbers, we still have a higher demand base coming into this year than what we had a year ago. So I guess I don't think that we can sit here and say that the market just has to continually edge down, although, you know, like I say, it doesn't necessarily have to go up either. Once the out-of-position long gets out of his position, which the out-of-position long right now is a farmer who's that 6 billion bushel that's been LDP'd, you have to get that guy out of the market before you can see it go a lot higher, I think.
Yeah, that was my next question. We have an awful lot of LDP'd corn out there that's probably sitting unpriced, and it's sort of a waiting game at this point. Farmers are awfully scared, I suppose, that the cash market just will wait them out until they have to put that back into the marketplace.
Well, I think that's the key to your marketing strategy in the near term, is to avoid losing that basis improvement that you've got. So you need to figure out some way to get that basis locked in. and to protect yourself, you know, give yourself some protection to the downside in case you think you need it on the other side of the market. So, you know, be able to gain if the price goes up, lock in your bases, and keep your bottom protected.
Greg mentioned that he thinks maybe there's a potential for 3 to 4 million acres of corn not to show up next year. What might that do to the marketplace?
I guess I wouldn't be quite that high, but again, demand's got a possibility, I think, of being around 12 billion bushel next year. I think that it will drive your December 06 corn down eventually.
You were looking for a positive spin on the market. I played that out for you.
Well, the December of 06 corn is up there at pretty decent levels right now. So as you go through the new crop, I think that's how it would play out as far as the market goes.
Do you think that, if I can cut in here, Bill, you think that we could have a 12 billion total usage next year?
I think we could be real close to that, yeah. If you look at some of the analysis on the ethanol, and I think myself that the feed usage this year is probably 150 million or so too light. So,
Wait, so you think you're talking a 12 billion usage?
I think that we could be real close to that.
And this year we're at what, 10.8 at the moment, right?
I'm sorry, I got my number, 11 billion usage.
Well, I was going to say.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Those ethanol plants are coming up fast. Yeah. I don't know.
We were talking about 12 billion bushel crop before they're clean.
Okay.
Yeah, we were looking at $3, $4, $5 corn again real quick, weren't we? All right, let's talk about the bean market. Trade about a dime lower Wednesday afternoon, selling off at the end of the session. Now, I know this puts you in a tough spot, but let's say the pressure continued Friday and that the market dropped another 12 cents in what would be termed as very light holiday trade, maybe down to 550, which of course, as a reminder, we cannot know because the Friday trade took place after this program was recorded. But let's say it did, and I want to know, is that low enough for the bean market for the time being if it traded down to 550, or does it trigger more selling?
Well, I guess my feeling is that you know, it's the nature of the business that you're always in a hurry for things to happen. You want your goals achieved, you know, real quickly, whether it's, you know, a bullish scenario or a bearish one. But I think the most likely scenario we're going to see unfold in the next 2 or 3 months here, assuming a normal situation in South America, which would be better growing conditions than they've had the last 2 years. If that happens, I think we'll just do a very slow, agonizing drift lower. And if we drop another 12 cents Friday, so be it. No, I don't think that's low enough. If you just take 2.5 times front month corn, which would normally give you what the long-term average bean price is, shoot, these beans after Wednesday's price and drop in the corn, I mean, I don't know, it'd probably be like around 510 or something like that. So, No, 550, I wouldn't be excited about buying it there, to tell you the truth, except for, you know, just a short-term day trade thing, looking for a short covering a pop or something. But I just don't see this direction changing for quite a while.
I kind of thought the interesting thing about the trade Wednesday was the weakness, actually, that was sparked in the meal and the oil by the report that those stocks were larger than expected. Is there any danger that the products aren't going to be used as quickly as most had expected, or is this it's sort of an after-the-fact revelation on the meal and the stocks and oil stocks?
We're still at the bottom end of the range, but we're basically still in that 40 to 50 cent range that beans have been in for a long time. To me, the only thing that's going to break that out right now is, you know, real concerns about the avian bird flu outbreak. That would push things lower as people would perceive that usage wouldn't need to be as strong. On the other hand, if South America has some weather problems, rust or dry weather, whatever that might be, then we could break out of that range on the upside. But they're just now getting beans planted in South America. They're 75% planted. So it's too early for a weather problem yet, and we don't have the avian scare yet either. So I still think we're just in a trading range in beans.
I think the avian flu, the bird flu, is really the key. And the concern I've got is that we've seen the meal prices in China decline. We've seen the processors reduce their crush. And so there is some fundamentals there. But the real concern in my mind is the emotional side of it. And the story comes out that pushes the beans through support level. And then the funds decide to get on the bandwagon when the lines cross, and that's where I think you could drive the bean market down. right now the funds are pretty even on their position.
Let's touch on the wheat very quickly. We heard this week from one of our meteorologists that things aren't looking particularly good in Australia. Of course, the winter wheat crop here is not in as good a shape as it has been, and they're deficit, actually, in moisture. But the wheat continues to trade lower. Why is that the case?
Well, I guess I think that it's kind of a precursor to the corn market. When the acres were needed, the prices were up there. You had cash wheat for next year in the 340 to 350 area, and the acres were planted, and now the market can relax until it actually sees a problem. The winter time weather is hard to get the wheat to rally on. It always has been.
When we return, we'll take a look at the livestock market and the grain markets as well with Purdue University Extension ag economist Chris Hurt. I'm Todd Gleason. This is Commodity Week.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. While there was a day here and there that was seasonably mild this week, the trend to colder weather continued as a series of clipper-type systems moved through the Midwest. For the most part, the systems were moisture-starved and didn't yield much in the way of precipitation. However, from the weather systems earlier in the month, precipitation for November is generally near to above normal across the southern two-thirds and the extreme northern portions of Illinois. A corridor roughly from Quincy to Chicago has about 75 to 80% of normal precipitation this month. The transition to winter weather will continue as we move toward the start of climatological winter on December 1st, a more realistic start to the winter season in the Midwest than the solstice on or about December 21st. The weather pattern over the Midwest should remain active next week. Most of Illinois should see a chance of precipitation on most days next week, likely as rain early in the week, and then rain changing to snow late in the week. Temperatures should generally be near normal, which means highs at this time of the year in the upper 30s north to upper 40s south, and lows in the mid-20s north to the low 30s south. For the Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
Commodity Week is a production of listener-supported public radio at the University of Illinois. To learn more, visit us online at WILL.UIUC.edu. Click on AM and then on Agriculture.
I'm Todd Gleason. This is Commodity Week. Our panelists today are Clayton Pope of Clayton Pope Commodities out of Champaign, Illinois, Bill Mayer, Roach Ag Marketing out of Lexington, Illinois, and Greg Johnson of the Andersons here in Champaign County. Our guest joins us from his West Lafayette office at Purdue University in Indiana. Chris Hurt joined the Purdue Department of Ag Econ in 1981. He teaches courses on commodity marketing and jointly writes the weekly Outlook newsletter published by the U of I. He also serves as the editor of the Purdue Agricultural Economics Report. Chris, thanks for joining us today.
Oh, it's always a pleasure, Todd. How
do you view the fundamentals of the corn market at this time?
Well, I think we have, as your panel has pointed out, just a huge amount of supply that's going to be hanging over the market for all of the next probably 9 months. A couple of items that were not mentioned in terms of pricing on corn. One is the supply, and I think we do not have the final number on the crop. There's just a very strong tendency when we see the USDA increase the size of the crop in September, October, and November for there to be a slight revision higher as we go into the final January report. Now, that's true on both corn and soybeans. So I think we have to be thinking it's not a big number, but it's another half a bushel to a bushel higher on the corn. So that certainly is one factor we're still going to talk about. I think a second thing we've got to that will influence the price patterns is going to be the farmer selling. And at this point, the bin doors are shut pretty tight. But after the first of the year, we know there's going to be a lot more corn coming out. And I think probably it will be sometime on into later January or February before we really see the corn market have to bid very aggressively to get corn moving again. So I think the tone I see is, I think as your panel generally pointed out, we're looking for the bottom here. I don't think we can be assured we've found the bottom yet. And, you know, there could be another, I think, dime down in this market. And I think especially what we'd see is the erosion of those deferred premiums, as was mentioned. I think that's what we have to be worried about. losing this opportunity for farmers to earn the carry that was there all fall.
Now, I'm sure we will come back to the grain and oilseed markets in just a second when the panelists begin to ask questions, but I did want you to get have some time to discuss the meats and the livestock market for me and tell us what your analysis of both the cattle and the hog markets might be.
Well, I think the cattle, we're seeing a very strong market there in the low 90s. We probably will continue to see that improve going into December a bit, but especially into the first quarter of 2006, I think we'll be looking at the $92-$94 finished cattle. That's assuming we do not open trade with Asia on beef. If we get that opened, you know, still some discussion that that could be coming about, then I think it's possible we could add even a couple of dollars to that. So that looks very robust at this particular point. And the promise of course, finally, 2 years later, getting our trade open would be very welcome for the cattle industry. Hogs were in a kind of a difficult spot right now with more depressed prices than we really had anticipated. But as we get through November, we generally see a few dollars of improvement going into the tail end of the year. And as we go into the early part of next year, I think we'll probably see mid to higher 40s. And right now, we're still looking for recovery in these hog prices from where we are now and for a very good 6 months or even 9 months coming up. So I think some good profitability, low-cost grains, and that's very welcome for the hog producers to extend this streak of profitability they've had.
Chris, Bill Mayer.
Yeah, Bill.
One of the things I struggle with in addition to getting my 11 and 12s mixed up here, but is the feed usage. And the fact, you know, the livestock numbers are up from last year, and they've actually got the feed usage down. I guess my question is, how does the DDG that's produced from the ethanol, how does that fit into that, and is it really likely that we'll see the feed usage down even though the livestock numbers are higher?
Yeah, and that is puzzling, you know, given that we do see a reduction in feed usage this year on the balance sheet from last year. Probably some estimates of the crop being overestimated from that 04 crop that are showing up here in terms of that feed number. I have worked some with USDA on this question. They're still struggling some to try to do good evaluations of just what the substitutability is on the DDGs. But we're getting roughly a third of that corn back that goes through the ethanol process, 1.5 billion bushels this year, that comes back as a feed product. So I think we're looking at those numbers could be reducing our feed use by something in the range of 200, 300, or even 400 million bushels, as we're looking at, if we have 1.5 billion bushels of corn, if a third of that, that'd be about 500 million coming back in the form of feed. So that one is still one that I think a lot of people are trying to sort through, but is another reason why we're not seeing the growth in the feed use, the corn feed use category.
Chris, how much of this strength in the both cattle and hogs would you attribute to the avian bird flu hysteria that, you know, we're almost in here, as far as like China in particular goes?
Well, that's right, and you know, I think there's just no question it's going to help the pork industry the most. Obviously, we still have this confusion over whether we're going to be able to offer beef to the world or not, more broadly to the world. Poultry exports, particularly broiler exports, really get hit when you have the avian influenza around the world. So this says the world turns to pork. So I think we continue to look for good strength on the export side, and that really is what has led the pork complex to such good profitability really since the spring of 2004. So I think that continues. Where we're going to end up with that, again, it's a very market that's very reactive, but one that is extremely difficult to predict.
Explain, there were many that were thinking that avian or bird flu might be good for the U.S. poultry market, but you're simply saying people stop eating poultry because
of bird
flu?
Yeah, there is that impact, and again, we could see some countries, if they're restricted from exporting broiler meat, it could mean that some, if the U.S. is able to avoid the avian influenza, that it could help stimulate some exports out in the world.
Chris, last year with all the concern about Asian rust moving up into the United States, farmers were more willing to plant corn, and they did. And we had a 2-point-some-billion bushel carryout projected at this time last year, and the corn market did not have its typical spring rally. This year we're looking at 2.3 billion carryout, but we have higher input costs, and farmers seem to be more comfortable with spraying for the Asian rust. Do you get any indication from the Indiana farmers? Do we plant less corn this year, and if so, to what magnitude?
Well, I think that's definitely the direction we've seen in southern Indiana, as southern Illinois, more wheat planted. One of those responses on wheat or reasons given, of course, was the very high cost for input cost on corn. So there's just no question that I think we will shift reasonably heavily back towards soybeans. I've just been using a number to get started with at a 4% increase in terms of soybean acreage and probably something in the range of around a 3% reduction in corn acreage. Actually, that takes us pretty much back to our crop mix that we had in 2004. What we had in 2005 was the real fear and anxiety of soybean rust that caused much of that shifting. I'm sort of saying we go back to about where we were in 2004.
Yep. Chris, your price predictions for corn over the winter months?
I think we are trying to tell producers to think modestly in terms of the kinds of increases that we can get in corn and soybean prices. I think kind of central Indiana, central Illinois, types of prices, we're looking at probably $1.80, $1.85 cash prices, hoping that we will get an opportunity to sell some $2 corn along the way. We've been talking and hoping, I think, about the $6 mark on soybeans as a cash price. I think right now we have to be worried with the bearishness in the bean market. Is there the possibility we'll see cash prices hit the $5 number before we get to the $6 number? So it looks like kind of a long, drawn-out hope that we get some recovery. The news has been pretty bad the last week or two for the farmers, but we know there will be another day out there where we're going to talk more positive in this market. We don't just know when that's coming.
Chris, we appreciate you being with us today.
Oh, it's been great. Thanks a lot.
Thanks much. Chris Hurt is an Extension Ag Economist for Purdue University. Now, a final word from our panelists. Bill Mayer, Roach Ag Marketing.
I'd just like to wish everybody, as we go into this holiday season, a happy Thanksgiving here. And as we look back over the past growing season, we definitely have some things to be thankful for this year.
Greg Johnson?
Most years we seem to hit 270 on December corn. Even last year with a big carryout, we hit 270 in July. This year we may not, but 240 seems a little too cheap at this point.
And Clayton Pope?
I wouldn't be stuck like a deer caught in the headlights here. I think if you're sitting on half or more of your production here, I really think you better take some defensive steps to protect prices.
And that wraps up this week's edition of Commodity Week. We'd like to thank our panelists, Bill Mayer, Greg Johnson, and Clayton Pope. Something to keep in mind, this program was recorded Wednesday, November the 23rd. You can access this edition of Commodity Week and analysis throughout the week on demand on your computer. Our site on the World Wide Web is will.uiuc.edu. Just click on AM and then Agriculture. There you'll find Commodity Week, weekly analysis, cash grain reports, weather, and feature interviews with agricultural newsmakers. I'm Todd Gleason.
Commodity Week is made possible with support from AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com. And with support from ADM, working with the American farmer, creating products from his crops, creating markets for crops. ADM, resourceful by nature. Commodity Week is a production of listener-supported public radio at the University of Illinois. To learn more, visit us online at will.uiuc.edu.